SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Friday. Shoppers, go get those specials. Get those Christmas presents. Try not to run anybody over in the parking lot. A very good Black Friday. Race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website as well, SteveBick.com. Hope you had a absolutely fabulous Thanksgiving. And, of course, one of the cool things about the Thursday holiday and really any combination works. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, however, you know, the whole 5 days, whatever it is. It just feels, even if you're working, frankly. You know, here we took Wednesday, Thursday, but you're not working today, but it doesn't feel like work because actually none of what we do feels like work because we love it. And if you haven't looked ahead to the racing today yet, if you're going to just kind of swing into it, certainly from yesterday, the opportunity to, for me yesterday, you know, it was a wash. There's no way to, I can't finish off the cooking and do everything and play as well. Wednesday was a different story because I was doing plenty of prep work, and we're going to talk about Wednesday. I'll save part of the New York story for Nick Tamro. Nick's going to join us early today because Marty needed hour two today. So Nick off the break here after our first timeout, and we'll talk about that pick six and pick five carryover sequence, and it was interesting. After Andy and I discussed it on Tuesday, and you know, I had made one pass and then came back and wrote the thing up for Wednesday morning, it played out for the most part, you know, very logically, and yet it was still, especially with the, you know, the fairly pricey winner in the nightcap, in that very tricky nightcap. And it was great that the turf held together. Yesterday off. Right now, we're still on the turf today in New York. Yesterday was off, and that was too bad. Although the two stakes still had, you know, had solid enough horses that stayed in. The way things played out, though, I'm anxious for Nick's take, because it wasn't that the winner in that last leg was, you know, so outlandish. I just didn't expect the way it happened. Tis a chance that Toscano, you know, stretch out sprinter, putting blinkers on. I thought for sure, you know, that was a horse that had already, you know, shown speed, and so you put blinkers on a sprinter stretching out. You figure he's going to be pressing Fox Rules. I mean, Fox Rules, it's funny because Fox Rules and Mowbridge, who ended up dead heating in that wild three-horse finish. And it's funny, when it happened live, I thought, ugh, the three has won this. And that knocked me. I mean, I was live for real money. If Fox Rules gets the nose in, the $2,600 pick five. And another, I forget now what the pick, I can't remember what the pick four was. Was concentrating on the pick five. But it was, you know, it was real money. And when it went live, I thought, tis a chance, got there. And but then they showed the replay immediately after, and I thought for a second, ooh, Fox Rules might have won this. And then when they showed it again in slow motion, it was obvious that Franco, who had a tremendous, Manny Franco, did that repeatedly up the rail. And he did it yesterday in the stake. The you know, the rest of the sequence, you know, you needed to use a handful of horses. But what we talked about with that Okiyamo, and that worked out great. The single ran like a single. And amazingly, so funny, 25,000, this Harlan's Holiday colt drops down for, and out of Maiden Special Company, and nobody claims Okiyamo. They had a few of those vet scratches, and you know, people were obviously put off. But the rest of it, you know, the horses that you wanted and you needed, you know, DeMarchelier with that late rally, and Miss Ramona G, congratulations to Al Gold. Miss Ramona G ran very well, backed up her previous, etc. You know, Mini P was really one of four that you needed to use. The best thing that happened for me was Serra Talto. Kind of figured that race out best, and that provided, you know, plenty to carry the day, but not, you know, not to the extent that this was going to, that Fox Rules win by him. And what a warhorse he is. 9 years old. He's just wonderful. And frankly, Mobridge, too, who originally started with Lee Einsiedler. Lee named Mobridge for Bill Mott. It's his hometown, Mobridge. And he came running late. I don't know if Lascano didn't leave him with too much to do, per se, but just it was really fun, frankly. It was a great distraction. I was cooking and mixing and deciding and doing everything, and it made for a fun afternoon. Luckily, I think the cats were either downstairs in the basement or outside, so there was no cat available to kick. When 'tis a chance. I just was surprised. I mean, for a horse to have the kind of trip he had, it's a tribute to Manny Franco and to the prep work, Toscano, to just focus the horse enough. But you figured he's right outside of Fox Rules. Isn't he going to press? So anyway, we'll discuss it with Nick. A lot of fun things, a lot of interesting results the last couple of days. And that included the other night at Penn National. Get to those results, the Fabulous Strike and the Swatara and the Blue Mountain. In fact, the Blue Mountain, the Juvenile Fillies, got to be excited and pleased for Mark Reed. And Mark, you know, has come back to training and, you know, the last couple of years, and actually really pretty well into a full swing again this year. That's his first stake win since really coming back. And Please Flatter Me, a Munnings. And of course, smart angle. The training that he's doing, they were the people that had Carrie Ann, that they ultimately, you know, turned into a stake filly, and then I think then sold, right? Carrie Ann ended up with the Grand Motion. But this was nice. Very pleased for Mark. And also, big congratulations to Kim Gracie, who wins for Julia John. Johnny Jump Up. And Johnny Jump Up jumped up at 23-1 to win the Swatara. And that's a great win for Kim. And, of course, JJ's daughter, and as always, from coming up under JJ, and always, her horses always look good. And for her to fashion this win, that's great. Congratulations. And then the Uptown Charlie Brown story continues to be really interesting. And Midtown Charlie Brown, you know, and Speed, it is notable. I mean, Speed was at a premium, not at a premium, but it was premium value in terms of these three races, and wire to wire for all three winners. Midtown Charlie Brown and Eddie Coletti for the Uptown Charlie Brown team, and they themselves are fashioning him. It's like a little Kitten's Joy story to some extent. They bred some of these, and others they, I'm sure they, you know, helped to push his stud career, and he's getting winners. And this is a big win. Midtown Charlie Brown. And Eddie Coletti, of course, does a nice job. Notably, you know, the two open company races, the Blue Mountain was Pennsylvania breds, but the other two races, the open company, both Pennsylvania bred winners. The Jumpstart Gelding, bred by Charles McGill. Not the Charles McGill in Better Call Saul. That's a fictional character. And the Midtown Charlie Brown. And of course, I'm sure there's Downtown Charlie Brown. East Side Charlie Brown. There's virtually every neighborhood will be represented at some point. Every point on the compass. Zia Park action to keep tabs on and catch up on. A little bit of everybody, actually, out at Zia with the Oaks and the Derby. We'll get to that. And how about down? In fact, I talked to Hammer this morning. He can't join us because he's going to be on an airplane heading back. He was in Florida instead of SF for, you know, usually spends Thanksgiving in Northern Cal. But with the fires and everything, they ended up going as a family to Florida. And in addition to getting to Disney and so forth, Hammer went to OBS for the Training Center Stakes card. And a big congratulations to Declan Carroll in only his 26th mount. He's a stakes-winning jock, and it was a big field. He gave Looking to Strike, the Cassie Barber, a tremendous ride. And Davey was on hand, and I think Kim must have been there, I think. I'm guessing. Maybe not. I'm not. Maybe. She put up a picture, and I retweeted it. Delighted for Declan Carroll and for the Carrolls. Southern Sis also. Cassie swept the two Thoroughbred Stakes, the filly and mare, with Gaffleone as well. We'll get to Aqueduct. Life in Shambles. Talk about venerable horses. He won that fall high weight yesterday. The red carpet, Ray Bell. Jay Pridman will be with us. Marty McGee. To go over the unbelievable action at Churchill. The Stars of Tomorrow card, it is Clark Day and all that, Mrs. Revere today, but the Stars of Tomorrow card, wait till you hear the numbers. It's outlandish what they put together. Ben Huffman. Let's take a break. Getting going, lots to do. Nick Tamaro kicks us off. Weekend preview at the races, holiday edition. Happy Thanksgiving again.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Bringing down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Somewhere in South End when you were fun, you took my hand and you made me run up past the prison to the seafront.
Back at the races, about 17 in, and I do see that we're off the turf in New York today, which is too bad. Looking at the, you can sign up for the horseman's texts, which alert you right away. And I was looking at it, and I thought it was yesterday's actually, because it had the same kind of a look to it. But it was 7:27 this morning. I should have been pretty good about tweeting that out for everybody so they know to adjust. So we are off the turf today, and that it really only impacts the one, or make it the two stakes, the Giaponte and the Forever Together. And they both have three MTOs, so the Horseman and the Racing Office did get three in there, so we'll see. We'll see how they play out. In between those two, you do have the Key Sense for the two-year-old fillies, the New York Breds. That's a nice big field of 12, and the Comley as well, which got eight. And we touched on very briefly with Andy on Tuesday. Right now, Nick Tamaro joins us. Nick, hope you had a happy Thanksgiving.
I did, Steve, very much so. I hope you did as well. I hope everybody out there did, and that we're past the holiday itself now, which means for racing fans, we're into what's usually an awesome weekend.
Very much. And, of course, I think every year when we have this conversation, I ask you about the Italian, your particular, the Tamaro Italian Thanksgiving table.
Yeah, you know, we actually go to two different people's houses, so we don't have much of an Italian flair in ours. We usually we get after a little bit more at Christmas time. So there's
nice.
There are some fishes that show up on Christmas Eve.
Yay! Seven exactly. Of them, I believe.
That's the magic number.
I love it. Well, this was we're going to be eating turkey here for days on end. And Tina, actually, it's gotten so that the stuffing's her first priority. She doesn't, she likes everything else, but my stuffing, which is basically my mother's stuffing, has completely changed her life when it comes to
Thanksgiving. You go the cornbread route, or are you more traditional?
No, traditional, and with sausage, and on the Italian with Italian sausage, actually, as opposed to breakfast sausage.
Love the best.
Yeah, that's my it's my mother's. I mean, it's basically a riff on my mother's. I've added some things. I've added some dried fruit. I've added some raisins and those awful dried cranberries, which I hate the rest of the year. I've explained that before, that it's the most overrated fruit in in captivity. I've even gotten more excited about the stuffing, because it gets Tina excited. That's all she talks about for weeks leading up. The stuffing. She said you can burn or you could ruin anything. Don't screw up the stuffing. That's her one instruction. Well, let's get some recapping in before we look ahead to the weekend. And Nick, I hadn't touch base or texted you during the course of that sequence on Wednesday, but Andy and I went over it, and it played out more straightforwardly than it looked on paper in terms of the way the results happened until the nightcap. But it didn't make ticket building easy, because you had plenty of considerations all along the way before you got to that squirrely nightcap.
Yeah, and it was a great example of how using an ABC structure to your multi-race plays is going to give you an advantage, because for most people, this was, and full disclosure, I did not hit. I wouldn't have used Tis a Chance under any circumstance. So I lost. I know plenty of people who did. I know a couple of people who lost as well. I know a couple of people who hit. So, but my point being, that was a sequence where if you were playing the pick six, even on a relatively modest budget, you could have been 5 A's into the nightcap. Because obviously Dimash Chillier was going to be an A, and Mrs. Ramona G was going to be an A. And then even if it got a little bit more difficult as the sequence went on, but all in all, it was a number of formful results, and there were horses that won that you sort of expected to. And it was a sequence where it seemed a little bit more daunting, I think, in handicapping it than it actually was. And that often happens, right? Because we get these big carryover sequences, and what you're thinking in your mind is, oh my gosh, there's been long shot left and right. But everybody's single, Okeamo, was a very easy winner of the sixth. And then Mini P won what was kind of a tricky seventh race, where the favorite, Argon, who I thought was going to be very, very difficult to beat, was just god-awful. Didn't get the greatest of trips, maybe being a little bit wide, but really came up wanting late. And there was kind of some crazy action in that race with Rhode Island going off a relatively short price. But and then you had Cheritalco, who at 9-2, you had the back-to-back 9-2 shots were both, you know, very havable. And obviously Cheritalco's record at Aqueduct was 2-2 coming in, so there was plenty to like, and that felt like a race where there'd be some hitting on the front end, and you wanted a horse who might be able to sit a little bit off of it. One thing to throw in on that race is that the apprentice, Raylo Gutierrez, is making a really nice impression in New York. Looks like a guy with a future. And he's getting a lot of live mounts, obviously, being with a really top-notch agent in Jimmy Riccio Jr. So that set it up for the nightcap where, you know, pretty much everybody was on some combination of extending it all the way to Fox Rules, the 1, 2, 4, 9, and 11. And what threw a monkey wrench into it was Tis a Chance at 13-1. Now, my takeaway from that, not only was that I was very surprised that Tis a Chance was only 13-1, he looked like a much longer price on paper to me. And the way the race unfolded was a little disappointing, because I know that he's had some success lately coming from off the pace, but boy, McKagan to me is always a one-way type of horse, and so it was unfortunate to see him be taken off the pace. And if he had gone to the lead, then I think that would have been a situation where it was a little bit more fluid on the front end, and you probably, in that case, Mobridge would have won. Mobridge did make the only real off-the-pace move in the race and came up a little bit short. But, hey, hats off to anybody who found his a chance, was willing to include him. I think the people who did certainly were a little bit thinner in the early portion of the sequence and got to a point where they could use maybe three main horses and four backups.
To concentrate on the nightcap, and we can hit a couple of notes earlier to concentrate on this, what and I wrote it up, and I specifically said Tis a Chance, I mean the whole the whole key to this was how much pace was going to be involved, because you knew Fox Rules is going to the lead. That's number one. You start from there. And Mobridge is going to get, some sort of a suck-along off-the-pace trip from down inside, saving ground and coming with a run. All right. And those were the two horses. When I handicapped it on Monday, knowing that Andy and I were going to talk about it, the only two horses that I highlighted on my quick sheet was Fox Rules and Mobridge. And then later I added, three horses and kind of, restructured it. But to me, here's Tis a Chance, who's been sprinting, and now he's putting blinkers on. So how is his natural speed only going to be enhanced with the blinkers, and isn't he going to press? And yet he was able to settle and get an absolutely terrific ride. And Manny Franco, is really, for those not paying attention, it's Ortiz. Manny Franco is on a basically a level. If he was getting the business and was into the barns that the Ortizes were in, Manny Franco will be competing for the riding title constantly. That's the one thing about this that just flummoxed me. When I saw him coming up the inside, I'm thinking, oh my God, I couldn't believe the way it unfolded from that standpoint. And I, having two A's and three B's, I didn't even bother with any C's. And it, cause I'd already spent enough. And I thought, you know what? If it's not one of those five, and plus, Tis a Chance is what? One for his last 28? Or 26, he doesn't win that much. He was like another version of Cecilia Mike.
Yeah, but even a considerably less accomplished version, right? I mean, Cecilia Mike being that he's had a pretty good year all in all. But yeah, and that's the vexing thing about these pace scenarios, and I know that, we bitch about them endlessly in terms of which horses are going to go, and, you almost are handicapping which riders are the types that might ride their horses forwardly, and it makes handicapping difficult to begin with, right? But when we have to sort through in what looks like a pace-loaded race, who might be the one that takes back and enables somebody to get that, perfect stalking trip, that's a bit of a nuisance. And so that was what you needed to conclude if you were using Tis a Chance, was that he was going to get basically everything to go his way. He was going to get a perfect inside stalking trip. Nobody was going to press Fox Rules and get it into that super pace situation that we all thought it was going to be. And that's exactly what ended up happening. So worth noting, that was John Toscano's sixth win of the meet. His barn is obviously very hot. He won the first race at Aqueduct of this meet. Most of us were paying attention to the Breeders' Cup at that point. I, of course, was betting Aqueduct too. But he's continued to win. He won with a first-time starter on opening weekend, which, anybody who follows New York even passively knows that John Toscano winning with a first-time starter is not something we see very much. It's actually a pretty good-looking win, too, at 11-1. So that's a barn that I think you want to highlight, you want to pay particular attention to. A lot of it has to do with the fact that, the racing at Aqueduct is a little bit easier than it is at Belmont and Saratoga, but I mean, Toscano's barn is going so well that it even got apprentice, 10-pound apprentice Benji Hernandez, his first win on a Wednesday card a couple of weeks ago, or about a week ago. And with all due respect to Benji Hernandez, who'll probably improve, he does not look like Raymond Gutierrez on horseback. So it's a good time to be in the Toscano barn. And he beat me, beat a lot of other people, but I think the takeaway from it, and I try to take away something from every sequence where I lose, I'm piling up takeaways, and one of it is that if it looks sensible and it looks relatively easy, be judicious with it, be cautious, but don't be overly cynical. Take a horse like Okeyamo, take a horse like Mrs. Ramona G. The way they were betting DeMarchelier, I know it had to do with just Chad having a distant turf horse, but that was a little bit more money in what looked like a competitive race on paper than you really could have expected. The other thing about that race was that when you don't get a lot of insight into how races are being bet when you're playing these big multi-race sequences, but they weren't getting mouthy out at all. So it almost made you feel like, okay, maybe this is a situation where I need to upgrade the Marchelier
or even put him as a lone A or only use him and Size McQuaid. I actually like Size McQuaid. I know Andy took a big stand against him, and he almost won. But, you know, that was a situation where maybe you could have made, like, a little bit of an adjustment on the fly. You also could see the doubles into the next race where Mrs. Ramona G was getting pounded. And one thing about that race is that it didn't look like there was a lot of pace on paper. Jeremiah Englehart is the type of trainer, him and his father both, their horses don't get wired very often. They know how to train with speed. They're smart when they get their horses into situations where they can take advantage of their early speed. So, of course, hindsight's 20/20. Looking back on it, if you could have narrowed it down a little bit there, that would have given you the opportunity to have a long shot later on.
And I'll also add one thing when you want to take away and you go back and look, the best idea and the best opinion I had was in that eighth race, and in what looked like a competitive race with a bunch of, you know, mostly hard hitters and horses that, you know, have had real form. One of the strangest things of the day, you mentioned, you know, some of the overbet types. Blewett was slow on Byers, was slow on Thoroughgraph, and was slow on time form, and I'm going to assume for the same reason was slow on the sheets, and yet it goes off at less than 2-1, and I had no interest in Blewett, and I don't know. It's kind of funny. I mean, usually when there's that uniformity, sometimes a horse will get bet a little bit, you know, because of a sheet or a Thoroughgraph, you know, that you know that, you know, sometimes you see some action on a horse that might not look to the general public like it's live, but, you know, the sheet players know that there's something there. This was weird that took a lot of money, and I guess off of the prior reputation. But the takeaway I want people to be reminded of: go back to Serratalto and look at what was going on there. This was a horse returning to State Bred Company from Open Allowance Company, and in addition to doing that, was in for the tag. Was a horse that had already cleared this condition. And when you get this opportunity, you see this in places with pronounced State Bred programs, when you see them come back like this, they are invariably a big lean. And I completely went in, and you were getting 5 pounds from Rayla.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Now, you know, Blewett has gotten quite a reputation based on a sort of impressive debut win. And this was something that the guys talked about as well on Talking Horses. But he was facing a bunch of horses in that race that were really hard-hitting New York bred. And here is a horse that's two other than eligible, facing a bunch of horses that had cleared the two other than, you know, or had run competitively against Open Company, maybe hadn't won, but had certainly run well enough to put them in a really powerful position in there. So, you know, Blewett needed to have his running shoes on. That was a really tough New York bred two other than. I mean, Morning Breeze was coming out of a couple of really good Open Company performances, and he had a great trip on Wednesday and was hard-pressed to even get in the money. So Benevolence is obviously in very, very good form, figured to get a great kind of pace dynamic, and closed well to run second. But, you know, that was a situation where you had a class issue with Blewett, you had a speed figure issue with Blewett, and we didn't even touch on how the hell was he going to win that race with his running style. But how was he going to win a 6-furlong race where they were likely to run him off the speed? That's exactly what happened. He was done at half mile pole. So I wasn't expecting much from him. I used him as a backup and was not concerned, obviously, once they hit the far turn when it looked like he was ready to call it a day.
Yeah, the horse that really disappointed, because there was a bit of a buzz about him, was T Loves a Fight, who, you know, if he was able to run back to anything close to his A races, was interesting, and he didn't lift a hoof. I mean, he just galloped along in the back. So
he was bad, and the thing to me that what I was reminded of coming out of that, he came out of a pretty good barn, so that was not necessarily going to be the move up that I think some thought it might be, and I used him. I thought it could easily be a kind of a big move up. He also felt like he fit the way the race was going to unfold very, very well. But just a reminder to everybody, when it comes to dirt horses, especially dirt sprinters, Michelle Nevin's good. So it was going to be difficult for him to maybe improve quite a bit. But yeah, no doubt about it. He was very disappointing. He was probably a little bit too close to the pace. Needed to just drop back and make one run. Don't really know if the rail was the most ideal spot to be in. That's generally been the case for most of the meet. It does feel like they're moving from a couple of paths off of it. So just one thing to keep in mind, especially as it continues to get a little colder.
Well, it was fun. It was really it made for a fun afternoon, and even getting beat for the big tickets, I was glad you did the work, and I hope people benefited. Yesterday, obviously, the two stake races that came off, but there was also veteran Life in Shambles, who has run for everybody that he's ever trained under, and whether it's Clement and Asmussen and now Service, he's just so likable, and of course, famous years ago as what's his name's. Training partner, the Clement, oh my God, the
Tonalist.
Tonalist, thank you. Tonalist workman.
Bad workhorse. Right. Well, and you know what? One thing on the stakes yesterday for everybody to remember, don't stop looking at races when they're off the turf. We say this left and right. Maddie's Magnum paid $17 in the winter memories yesterday. Maddie's Magnum was the only dirt horse in the race.
Yep.
So don't just take a hard stance against looking at these races, because you really can get tremendous value. And what Maddie's Magnum did was take a pick four sequence that had been very, very formful and a pick five sequence that had been largely very formful and turn the Naira Betts pick five into $1,000 for 50 cents. I mean, there's nothing wrong with getting that one little price in there that can really juice those up. So obviously being off the turf today, don't just overlook those. There's always, always, always opportunities with off-the-turf races.
Yeah, it's pretty funny because the only MTO and manages to go off, let's see, is what, the 1-2 third as the – and actually, 770-1 was the fourth choice. Andy talks about this so often and tries to remind everybody. I mean, significant form. What magic was going to happen to turn her into a dirt horse yesterday, exactly, to go off?
Yeah, her trainer at this point probably is capable of spotting dirt horses, and he probably would have tried. It's a pretty lucrative set of races for three-year-old fillies on the dirt throughout the year. I probably would have tried before yesterday if he thought she could dirt.
Exactly. Well, a couple of ideas for today before we talk about Saturday and I suppose, the two stakes that stayed on the dirt, Nick, the two-year-olds, the Key Sense, and the Comely, just everybody else be aware of the MTOs in the Gia Ponte and the Forever Together. But it is still an all-stakes late pick four in New York today.
Yeah, and we'll see what Todd Fletcher does with his pair of MTOs today that are both re-entered for the Discovery tomorrow. He could run both today. He could run one today and one tomorrow. Either way, they'll each have a say in the outcome of these respective races. I think they probably both fit really well in the Gia Ponte today, given that it'll be just a little bit easier race. But the Comely ended up coming up pretty nice, all in all. It's not a bad race by any means, and you've got a couple of horses that have been competitive against New York bred. You got a few. You have a situation which we were just kind of talking about in a different setting, but you have War Cabinet moving to the dirt, a horse who has trained, obviously, on the dirt, and we're going to look and see whether she can handle the main track. But, I think coming out of there, looking at everybody's last races as a whole, you're going to be pretty drawn to Blames, who ran exceptionally well on the Raven Run. Obviously, Shamrock Rose ran her down, came back and won the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. Blamed ended up finding herself on the lead in that Raven Run, and that was a race on paper that looked like it was just loaded with pace. She set a very, very strong pace, ultimately, to be run down. And I know Keeneland was probably a little tilted towards front runners this meet, but she ran very, very well. Looks like there's
no speed to speak up to her inside. So she's going to win that race to the first turn and really only has Remedy to worry about. Remedy feels like a horse that'll probably be comfortable stalking and pouncing in here for Javier Castellano and Brad Cox. So I would imagine that those two will probably try and dominate it on the front end. I've always had a little thing for Indy Union. I thought she ran very well in a good one other than last time. She's very much a one-run, very slow and deliberate closer who's going to need things to unfold in front of her. So hopefully, for her case, maybe you'll get Albero Bello putting a little bit of pressure on Blamed and Remedy and set things up. So I thought it would probably be one of those. It felt like a relatively formful race, and we'll see if anybody upsets things early. We're back in that pace conversation where we're wondering how much speed there may be. The Forever Together will be ripped apart with scratches, which is unfortunate. We'll see what those are once they come in. Ready to Confess is on the dirt again. Was in a difficult spot last time at Delaware, trying to make up ground into a really, really slow pace. But she's a horse who's got dirt form that definitely makes her very, very dangerous. This was a good race on paper on the turf. It looked like Contention ran really deep. So we'll see. Sexy Reasons has entered as an MTO. She also enters an MTO tomorrow in the Long Island. I would imagine she'll end up here. Obviously, Maddie's Magnum will come out, having run yesterday. And you have Saida, who is going to move up off a claiming race, off a claim by Chad Summers. She'll be in there to set the pace. I don't think she'll make 6 of the 9 furlongs. So, the 8 furlongs, because it'll go back to a one-turn mile. And so you'll have the situation where you might get a little bit of value on some of the horses with dirt form, and Ready to Confess to me feels like, in many ways, the right one.
Turn to Saturday, and just looking, I was trying to look ahead to see about weather-wise, and if...
it's supposed to be 50 degrees tomorrow, so I mean, I would imagine... The Long Island's a $400,000 race with some European.
Yeah, they'll be on.
So, yeah, they'll be on there. And that's a fun race. That's a good place to start. The biggest question to me in this race is, of the Chad Brown participants, you kind of have to figure out where you want to go. And obviously, with the unenviable task of making the morning line, David Aragon has settled on Polara as the one that will probably get the most money, and deservedly so. Given that she took a ton of support in the E.P. Taylor. She was bad in that race. She really didn't run well at all. Looked like she probably had some run when they straightened out. There was no pace to speak of in that race, but she was very one-paced late, perhaps needed to start in America off a little bit of a layoff. I'm always cautious to take that approach because these Chad Brown horses usually show up running. So it's a little disconcerting that she was sort of that average. Lady Montour went into the Flower Bowl looking like she might be a grade one caliber horse, came out of it and just not quite good enough to beat the likes of Four Star Crook. And On the Moon Again, obviously Four Star Crook, one of the better older female turf horses in the country, so no shame in that. In terms of the horses shipping in, Knight of England has faced some heavy heads overseas. Granted, her group one placing was in Germany, but still, that was a very, very nice second in the German Oaks, and we've clearly seen Marty Schwartz over time take a lot of these horses and bring them over now with Chad Brown primarily and have a great deal of success. Given that this was a German horse that's showing up in America getting Lasix, you get the feeling that maybe she had a little bit of an issue bleeding. I'll tell you the surprising thing and probably the encouraging thing about her is she's got some pace. So if she's able to stay relatively close, Jose Ortiz getting on maybe leads you to believe that they're going to do that, then that will increase her chances quite a bit. In terms of horses that might be prices that could be a little bit interesting, I like the rider change on Danceland, and given that Danceland has been a little bit closer than she needed to be in her last few starts, I'm hoping Jose Lozcano just lets her drop back and make one run. A mile and 3/8 has always felt like it could be the right trip for her. The Glens Falls is just a little bit too tough, maybe between Lady Montour and if Knight of England has a little bit of speed, if Tricky Escape gets ridden forwardly, there could be a little bit of pace in front of her in here, and maybe she can't at least sneak into the number at what should be a good price.
The Discovery?
The Discovery is a good race. Plainsman is a deserving favorite. He's gotten really good lately for Brad Cox. This is a horse that he got from Will Van Meter earlier this year and quickly made a good impression, running third in the one other than at Saratoga, and then came back and cleared those first two conditions at Belmont. Did so against older horses and faced some good ones in there. J.S. Bach was a new Jason Service horse from earlier in the summer, and Plainsman's his whole career seems to have really taken off now in this barn. I mean, obviously, the question in here is what you're going to do with Gronkowski. I wouldn't bet Gronkowski with Monopoly money. So I don't know. You know, we were sort of seduced by his big off-the-pace run in the Belmont.
where he just lagged behind, seemingly unable to handle dirt being thrown in his face, and then made a big run up the rail. He's clearly a little bit of a rail rat that needs to just kind of stick to the inside. I don't see how he's going to get enough pace in here, and he's going to be wildly overbet. So I'm not until they maybe find a way to inject some speed into Gronkowski, I don't see how he's going to make an impact in a mile and an eighth race with a moderate pace. So my approach to it is going to be to, depending on which Pletcher goes here, and if both of them go today, I'm going to assume that it's even money or 6-5 if they both go today, then he's a horse that I'll just try and beat in the multi-race plays and figure that Plainsman has an enormous pace advantage.
Well, it's going to be a nice weekend overall, and we'll talk later to Marty McGee about Churchill. If you haven't looked yet, Nick, you and I were kicking it around a little. It is just unbelievable on Saturday. The two-year-old card is always, the Stars of Tomorrow too, is always fascinating and important to track, but on top of everything else, it's a great betting card.
It is. And this is one of the, well, we texted about this morning, this is one of the best Kentucky Jockey Club fields I feel like we've ever seen. And the horses that ran well in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile coming back certainly make it that much more competitive. Nick's Go being drawn where he is, and with there being some speed inside of him, really makes you feel like this thing should heat up. And that opens the door for quite a number of horses. There are some off-the-pace types that have shown some ability. There are some on-the-pace types that have shown some ability. So I'm going to assume that they're going to move. I think that's going to help Signalman's chances quite a bit. I thought he got a great ride in the Juvenile from Brian Hernandez Jr. Obviously, having the inside is not going to hurt him whatsoever. I was really intrigued to see Dumps come back in this race with the way he ran in that Spendthrift Juvenile. But, boy, it looks like he's just in too deep, which says a lot about the quality of this field. It's strong from top to bottom. I was wondering if the 1-2 finishers from that one other than back on opening day, Royland and Limonite, could be competitive. They look slow. So, you know, it's a tough spot, and I'm gonna look to see if maybe I can't find an off-the-pace horse at a little bit of a price. Perhaps Brendan Walsh's plus K Parfait, who I would think with Julian Leperu is going to be taken back to make one run. And he was a game winner when he held off Harvey Wallbanger last time. Harvey Wallbanger, of course, came back and broke his maiden two starts later. The third-place finisher broke his maiden in his next start. So this is a horse that might have the right kind of profile and running style. And I can't say enough good things about Brendan Walsh. So here's a horse that you're going to get from his barn that's going to be a real price.
Well, everybody that was actually listening to the show, I'm going to pull an Andy on you. Brendan was on the other day, and I called him specifically about Parfait. And what caught my eye, not just Harvey Wallbanger, was Cutting Humor as well that came out of that came out of that race. One down at Gulfstream and one well. And there's another horse that has run back well out of that group. So there's a key set, but I agree. And this is a horse that wants, as Brendan even said, wants them as long as they write races. So
yeah, I was a keen on the day he won, and he was super game. And I was sitting about the eighth pole. They came in front of us. Obviously, there was a 16th to go at that point with it being the short stretch, and looked like he was beaten, really fought back. I thought at the time that might be a little bit more of Harvey Wallbanger hanging, but having watched the replay, this horse was good. It looks as if distance should be no issue, as you just alluded to. One other horse, too, that I'm really interested in seeing, I don't really know what kind of betting opportunity there's going to be, but So Alive was really interesting in breaking his maiden at Keeneland on closing day. And we're going to see him going a mile from the inside in the 10th. I'm a little surprised that we're getting him in here and not in a race at Gulfstream for Todd Pletcher. But, hey, nothing wrong with running for $78,000 and a one other event over the track where they'll run the Derby. This is a horse with an incredible pedigree who was bred by John Gunther, who, in case anybody doesn't realize, bred Justify and has bred a number of good horses over time. So Alive's pedigree to go long is about as good as you're going to find, and he certainly finished his debut like a horse that would really not struggle with any more ground. So I'm looking to really, really excited to see how he performs. And again, it's probably not going to be a huge wagering opportunity, but anytime these cards are so fun in that you get a lot of opportunities for horses that are going to truly stars of tomorrow. It's one of the great concepts in racing, and we'll see some good ones for sure. So Alive, of course, being a half to Vino Rosso, winner of the Wood Memorial, who was, I think, fourth in the Belmont. So distance, no issue.
Well, and I was going to quote this. I was going to save this for Marty, but I'll give you the numbers. 12 races. There was a potential, based on how many the gate will hold for these races, there was a potential for 152 horses to be entered and run. There's 145 entered. And every race, except the two races that have AEs, or that have, you know, that had room for more horses, every other race has AEs. It's unbelievable. 145 horses, so more over 12 per race on average. This one is really, it's the Saturday's engine on the train. Nick, have a great weekend, and we'll talk about things next week ahead of Cigar Mile Day.
Sounds great, Steve. Thanks for having me, and I will talk to you next week. Good luck, everybody.
NTAM 1215, Nick Tamara. Let's take a break. Come right back, and we'll have Jay Privman join us. Jay and Marty back-to-back. And, of course, my birthday's out of the way. Marty's is, and Jay is on deck coming up in a couple of weeks. Back after this, Jay Privman of the Daily Racing Board.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sportsform Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sportsform delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky, or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the 5 Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.